All right, so climate change, always something happening in the news. And before I get to some good news, which I'm going to be very happy to share with you, I'm going to talk about a couple things that aren't quite such good news. Desertification is getting worse, meaning it's getting drier as the world warms. Surprise, surprise, right? So just in the last handful of decades, I think, nearly the arid area of the world is about 30% bigger than it was. I think that's right. It's larger than India right now. That's the area that's been added to the arid regions of the world. And that's just over the past three decades. So dry lands, as they are technically called, I guess, make up 40% of all the land on the planet. It's not counting Antarctica. Plenty of moisture there for now. So 3/4 of the world's land has suffered drier conditions in the past 30 years, and that's likely to be permanent. Drought. We have droughts here in Iowa, sure. And then we have flooding. Then we have a drought. Then we have flooding. And it stays quite, quote, normal for a while. But droughts are one that you recover from a drought. When you turn arid, you don't recover. And again, that's up to 40% of the planet now, of the land on the planet, excluding Antarctica. So Africa lost about 12% of its gross domestic product because of the increasing aridity in that continent. And this is a report done by the UN Science Policy Interface. They also found that the losses that are forecast to happen. Africa will lose about 16% of its GDP because of increased desertification. Asia, close to 7%. So a UN spokesman who was involved with that pointed out that unlike droughts, again, where you recover, you don't. And when you don't recover, the crops, particularly corn, maize, for example, the maize yields in Kenya are expected to drop by half, which is huge. This is a big deal. And I don't know what to do about it because we're not figuring out that we have to turn back from the direction we've been going on burning of fossil fuels, which is, again, scientifically and profoundly the reason we have climate change. This is another conversation that ought to play into this is why are we still talking about growing the world's population from 8 billion to 10 billion when we have less land that people can live on and more strain on our water supply? So there's a logical disconnect here that we have to have some serious conversation about. Meanwhile, in the U.S., U.S. Senate Republicans, they're eager to sell off, apparently, 3 million acres of public land. They're trying to, it's really not even that clever, but they're trying to be clever. They're trying to say this is because we need affordable housing. We need to alleviate the housing crisis. So sell this land and build housing. Now, a lot of this, I've walked through a bunch of that land when I was on the climate march. And a lot of it is nowhere near anything. you're unless you're creating an entirely new city out of a forest in New Mexico or Arizona or somewhere, you're not going to be putting houses where people are going to be inclined to live. So maybe what's going there would be big mansions for billionaires. Oh, maybe. Anyway, I'm sure they're also going to be using that sold off land for timber extraction, for gas and oil exploration, who knows what, but they won't stop at anything. So again, somebody, Patrick Donnelly with the Center for Biological Diversity had a good way to describe this. He called the bill that includes this giveaway a Trojan horse because of being, it's presented as a way to increase the availability of housing, while in the end, it's really going to be a huge giveaway to the ultra rich at fire sale prices, as he calls them. This particular bill also instructs the U.S. Interior Department to, quote, immediately resume quarterly onshore oil and gas lease sales and requires, quote, a minimum of 4 oil and gas lease sales each year, each fiscal year, in Wyoming, New Mexico, Colorado, Utah, Montana, North Dakota, Oklahoma, Nevada, and Alaska, and any other state in which there is land available for oil and gas leasing under the Mineral Leasing Act. So, you know, not only is this an assault on our public lands, but it's going to make the climate crisis even worse. Anyway, okay, I'm done bringing you bad news, folks, for now. The rest of the show is all good news, I think. So, Iowa State University. There's some researchers there who are kind of they've got a new study going on. It's a very hands-on study. It's they're calling it agrivoltaics. I did not invent that word. I think I said it correctly. Agrivoltaics. Basically, it's growing food around solar panels. And some of these solar arrays are pretty darn large, as you know. But in between the panels, I mean, I sometimes they just throw down rocks, right? I've seen them grazing sheep. I don't think you want to do goats. Goats would just jump on the panels and wreck them. Sheep can't pull that stunt. But apparently the experiment now underway at Iowa State University is to grow food in between them. And I'm impressed with that. They're having some field days to learn how they're doing that coming up. And Kathy and I are planning to go to one of those. So, you know, that research could help increase support for, again, large-scale renewable energy farms in integrating food production in them. You know, and to think about it, you know, I guess around wind turbines, one of the other renewable sources of energy out there, we still have crop production. I know there are problems with how that all integrates, but that still happens. Around a coal-fired power plant, you're probably not going to get, well, maybe around them, but, you know, in the interior, you know, right up next to the smokestacks, no, you're not going to see a lot of food production. Personally, I would rather not see it around nuclear power plants either, but it's a good fit for solar plants, for solar arrays. It would also be a good fit, I think, for geothermal installations. Not sure, that's worth looking into, but again, this is good. So it's and I'm surprised that the Trump administration is letting this stand, but it's a $1.8 million four-year grant from the U.S. Department of Energy, and it will occur on a 10-acre solar farm owned by Alliant Energy. That's one of our two big investors here, utility investors. It's being built, you know, just between Ames and Des Moines, so just, you know, within, I think, 15, 20 miles of Des Moines. So they'll be doing horticulture research. That's already begun on vegetables, fruits, and bees being raised among the panels. Economists are planning to calculate whether those crops can be profitable. I don't see why not. I mean, it may be challenging to harvest them. It depends on what they are. But you know, I mean, integrating bees in with the vegetable crops, that's a great idea because those two need each other. They definitely need each other. It's not just in Iowa. There are five similar projects in other states that have been awarded grants. And I'm really hoping that the, you know, maybe I shouldn't even be talking about this because Steve Miller is probably listening to this program. He's going to tell Trump that they're going to try to cancel those grants. I don't know. Interestingly, I don't know which other four states have these projects, but they're probably mostly in red states, right? So again, good stuff for us, Iowa, and good research for the country. This is based on the premise that the U.S. will need to quadruple the amount of solar energy installed per year by 2030 to achieve long-range environmental goals. That's according to the Department of Energy. And so, you know, you're creating lots of agricultural opportunities if it works to grow food in between those solar arrays. Anyway, we'll see. We'll see where that goes. I'll report back on that after Kathy and I have a chance to tour the site on one of their open days.